AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. Brett Johnson with you here on a Tuesday afternoon. And on this Tuesday, we are joined by the editor-in-chief of the Minnesota Reformer. That's Patrick Houlihan. Make sure you go to MinnesotaReformer.com for the latest in Minnesota news and politics, as we are going to be chatting about some of the stories that they have been working on, including how Nazis, literal Nazis, took interest in a race in District 61A in South Minneapolis for the state legislature. We'll also be talking about a number of strikes that are happening around the Twin Cities that are part of a larger national effort. Plus, we'll be talking about some high-speed pursuits and data that shows that, well, they might be more dangerous than you think, as well as Super Tuesday. So lots to get to today. Patrick, thanks so much for coming back on the show.
Always a pleasure.
Absolutely. So I got to start off with this, how Nazis apparently took an interest in this race in District 61A, a state house seat in South Minneapolis. And it has to do with one of the DFL candidates, Katie Jones, who originally is from rural Indiana, and she has an environmental background before moving to Minneapolis. And she decided to run for the state legislature in District 61A after serving on the staff of former Representative Frank Hormstein, who will be stepping down from that seat. Somehow, Nazis took interest in this race on social media, even though Katie really had nothing to do with the idea of how they became interested. So tell us exactly, Patrick, more about who Katie is and how these extremist Nazis took an interest in this race.
Yeah, so the longtime legislator from that district, Representative Frank Hornstein, announced he was retiring and kind of set off a bit of a frenzy to get in the race. Katie is a fairly well-known policy professional in the district. She's worked with Hornstein on some issues. So she announced that she was going to run. And there's another guy in the district. His name is Will Stancil. He's well-known to folks on Twitter because he's become a nationally well-known online pugilist against the far right, although in some cases also the far left. He's developed a significant following. His day job is that he's a research fellow at the university where he studies the segregation of schools and housing, and he's been pretty influential in that sphere as well. But he's better known, at least in the online political world, for his Twitter presence. A few weeks ago, maybe it's a month or two ago now, he got into a Twitter conflict with the far right over, I guess, what we'd call race, quote-unquote, science. And the reason is that there was a lot of anti-diversity, equity, inclusion activism on the right, and it had reached to, I know this is a long story, convoluted story, but you had these folks on the right saying that that airlines with DEI programs were endangering the safety of the passengers. Of course, it's ridiculous. Airlines, commercial air travel has never been safer, and this is just flat-out racism. And so Stancil starts fighting this, and this is kind of like somewhat mainstream. I mean, it's funny, what's now considered mainstream right-wing used to be just completely beyond the pale, but he's sort of fighting with these people, and then the race science people show up to fight him, and then the Nazis come, and full-on, you know, full anti-Semitism, all the iconography, the whole thing, and they're fighting with him. Now, once he decides he's going to run for this legislative seat, they do a, you know, kind of a meme campaign, we would call it. It's the idea here is they're going to attack his opponent and try to build him up to make him look like, to associate him with Nazis. I mean, it's obviously ridiculous. A lot of it's kind of in, it's, you know, they, for the lulls, they say it's kind of just basically a joke, but it's Nazism, and so they start attacking Katie. I mean, viciously. They dox her. She's threatened with violence. They have images of her with tape over her mouth. I mean, it's just horrible stuff, and then Stancil sees what's happening. He starts blocking a lot of these people. And so they kind of get bored. Unfortunately, they apparently moved on to another one of the candidates. Her name is Isabel Rolfs. And they start harassing her. It's gender based, sexual orientation based, and racially based attacks on her. Isabel's campaign manager told me they had to spend actually campaign funds on help with security at live campaign events. And so it really shows how online extremism can jump into the real world. And at this point, you know, it's for the people on the receiving end of this harassment, it's horrible. But it is online. But the problem is, as we've seen so many times in the last few years with this far right extremism, it can jump from online into real life. And into actual violence, and I think that's the great concern here. The other part of this story that I think is important to note, that it's so poignant almost, is that Kornstein himself, who's not online really to speak of, and he's been spared this, but he's the son of Holocaust survivors. He's probably one of the great Jewish peace and justice advocates of our time here in Minnesota. And it's just absolutely tragic to see the race for his successor get caught up into this horrible situation. So it the whole situation has caught my eye, and I thought it was important to kind of show people what can happen when this online extremism, which Twitter under Elon Musk's ownership, they've taken no measures at all to moderate. They're not trying to do anything about it, and so you get this situation where people are being harassed, and then there's the threat of it moving into real life.
And what's just crazy about this as well is that, as you bring up the idea that this online activity can morph into the real world, is that you look at Katie Jones, she wasn't even the original target she wasn't the direct target of online harassment. She was just largely kind of a means to get to an end by these extremist Nazis to go after Will Stancil, which really shows they have more sophisticated tactics than they might get credit for, when oftentimes they're portrayed as, well, these are just a bunch of goofy extremists on the internet sending out some harmless memes. But as we see, this really can spill over into the real world with lasting consequences.
Yeah, and they were trying to do this bank shot where they wanted, you can see now images of Stancil, who they've doctored his pictures of him to make him look like, sort of the classic German Nazi, and they've attached all this iconography to him and tried to associate him with National Socialism. It's all to try to drive support for him down, and then there's collateral damage here. These are real humans, Isabel and Katie, who are on the receiving end of this terrible harassment. It's all to get to Stancil. But Stancil's been putting up with online harassment for years now. And it's just unfortunate that this little legislative race, which there's really strong candidates, I would say also. I mean, all three of these, there's another candidate named Dylan McMahon. He's been in he's the chair of the local DFL party unit. But certainly, those three have good policy experience, interesting life experiences they bring to the table, and one of them will make an excellent legislator. It's just unfortunate that this race has become what it is, this kind of circus.
We'll read more about that column talking about this race in 61A and how these right-wing Nazis became involved in it over at MinnesotaReformer.com. MinnesotaReformer.com is where you can find that column. Want to move on now to another article you guys have been working on, and this one was just released this morning, and by Christopher Ingram, talking about how dozens of Minnesotans have been killed in high-speed police chases since 2017. And as I was reading through, I didn't really know that there really was not a whole lot of data that showed how many people who are largely innocent bystanders are killed in these high-speed police chases. But as the data shows, not just in Minnesota, but around the country, these really are very dangerous. And more often than not, it usually is innocent bystanders that end up getting injured or possibly even killed when we have these high-speed police pursuits that oftentimes aren't even for violent offenses.
Exactly. And those incidents in Minnesota between 2017 and 2022, you had of the 54 incidents, deaths, 9 of them were just bystanders, 10 were passengers. And so, you know, those people are dead for no particularly good reason. The drivers were killed 19 times, and then there's some category called unknown 16. This is one of those that I think I'm glad that this is getting attention. We had an incident, we've had a number of incidents here, a high-profile one, when Laneil Frazier was killed in a case when an officer, Brian Cummings, was chasing some suspected thieves through a residential neighborhood of Minneapolis, and then the officer ran a red light and he killed Laneil Frazier, who had no connection to the case. And I think it's important that we do a better job of collecting this data, because it reminds me of how for a long time you couldn't get data on how many police shootings there were around the country until I would say the Brown killing in 2014 set off a good journalistic genre, if you will, of folks who started to really keep track of police shootings. And I think it's the same thing here with these pursuits. And so many of these really are just ill-advised and imprudent, these chases, because very often if you will just go to the guy's house, then it's you'll be able to collect them without incident a few hours later or the next day. And we know that's pretty true, because a lot of these folks are not wanted for violent crimes. I mean, we have 15 traffic stops that went awry that led to police chases where somebody died. We have nonviolent crimes, another 15 dead. Violent crimes is only 9. So in those cases, there was a violent criminal and they went on a pursuit and 9 people died. And then there's another category again, unknown is 15. We ought to have good data on this, and I think it ought to be hopefully educational for police departments that and they ought to really examine whether or not these pursuits are worth it. I know that's happened at a lot of departments, including Minneapolis. This ought to be a national conversation, and good on the San Francisco Chronicle, which put together this database and a 50 state database, which Chris availed himself of to get the local data. But this needs to be a national conversation about the imprudence of many of these pursuits.
Yeah, definitely agree, because I would have thought if I would have been asked, well, how often do you think innocent bystanders are either injured or killed in these high-speed pursuits? I say, maybe a few times, but as the data shows, that's certainly not the case. It happens much more frequency, not just in Minnesota, but around the country. Read more about what Christopher wrote over at MinnesotaReformer.com, titled Dozens of Minnesotans Have Been Killed in High-Speed Police Chases Since 2017. Want to get to a few other pieces of news before we wrap things up today, and do want to talk about some strikes that are taking place around the Twin Cities in Minnesota that have been kind of part of a larger effort, because thousands of Twin Cities janitors and nursing home workers are set to launch strikes. This has been Max Nestorak, who's been working on this, and it is part of this larger effort, as many other unions have been winning concessions from their employers around the state. And let's talk about what both the janitors and the nursing home workers are looking for, because at least when I look at the nursing home workers, it's pretty shocking to see that some of these nursing home workers were only getting paid $12 or $13 an hour. So certainly can't blame them for wanting higher pay, and definitely the same for many of these janitors as well that clean many of large businesses around Minnesota as well.
Yeah, the nursing home workers, there's about 1,000 of them at 12 facilities. They're starting a strike today. It's a 24-hour strike. They call it an unfair labor practices strike. They're looking for $25 an hour minimum wage. You know, this is some of the hardest work I can imagine doing, and good for them. And let's hope that the employers will see the light on this. This industry is really exists only thanks to state and federal funding for the most part. It all comes from Medicaid and Medicare. And you have these the nursing home executives making hundreds of thousands of dollars a year, and then turning around and not paying a living wage in many cases to these nursing home workers who have to work another job just to make ends meet. Then you've got 4,000 janitors who clean high rises, and they're also on strike across 100 buildings. Well, actually, they started on Monday. They're doing a 3-day strike, and airport janitors are joining today. This is all part of a coordinated effort on the part of the labor movement here in Minnesota. You've got public school teachers in St. Paul who are set to strike beginning Monday. I know they continue talks there. Minneapolis teachers. This is not a coincidence. The labor movement had all these contracts end at the same time. That was coordinated. They wanted to have this big show of force that I think might remind your listeners of something that's a little bit more almost like European. With numbers comes power. And so that's what they're after. And they've also seen the big raises at places like UPS and the big three automakers in the last year. And obviously there was that inflation spike that we all endured for a couple, 3 years there. And they're trying to catch up. And so they're organized and marching.
You can read more about that at MinnesotaReformer.com, including, I think, some interesting information about how some legislation passed by the legislature has impacted the pay for nursing home workers and still some disputes between management and the union. Again, find that over at MinnesotaReformer.com. And finally, before we wrap things up, Patrick, want to get your thoughts on Super Tuesday, which, of course, takes place tonight, including primary voting here in Minnesota. I want to get your thoughts on what could be happening in both the Democratic and Republican sides, because at least on the Democratic side, there has been a push to at least launch some opposition to Joe Biden, or at least vote uncommitted along those lines on the Democratic side. Meanwhile, on the Republican side, certainly Donald Trump is the favorite, although I will point out Minnesota back in 2016 was the only state to go for Marco Rubio, so we do sometimes do some unusual things here in the state. So what are your thoughts on Super Tuesday for this evening?
Yeah, I mean, I do think it's possible that Nikki Haley will have a decent outcome here. I don't think anybody thinks she'll win, but there is a lot of, let's call them Tim Pawlenty Republicans here, who were never quite... They were never quite into Donald Trump. As you mentioned, he came in third in the caucus. And now a lot of them may have already just left the party and they've become soft Democrats. But I still think there's a lot of kind of pro-business, mainstream Republicans who will back Haley. And I think that's why she was here last week, because they see this as a state where they have some potential. On the other side, you mentioned the uncommitted launch. It seems like it was a little bit late in the game. The effort to get people to mark uncommitted in Michigan started much earlier, and seemed like it had a little bit more momentum to it. But we'll see how it goes here. Democrats who are trying to send a message to Joe Biden that he needs to be a little bit less deferential to Israel and the Netanyahu government. One of the problems with that is that uh, the the polling is really favors American support for Israel. So if he were to kind of abandon Israel, that would be politically dangerous as well. So that's kind of a tough spot for folks who are looking to influence American foreign policy, I think. So it looks like the outcome is pretty much inevitable here. We're going to have a rerun of 2020, and it's just a matter of, you know, which candidate will get through this primary season in good shape for the general election.
And final question on this, do have to ask about our Minnesota candidate for president. Does Dean Phillips make any sort of impact here in Minnesota, or is he largely still going to be on the fringes, even with the results in his home state? What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's unlikely he picks up much support here. There's been a lot of disaffection and disillusion with Phillips and the campaign he's run, and just a strong drumbeat of anti-Phillips messaging from elected Democrats here and commentators. As you may remember, I was somewhat supportive of the idea of Democrats looking for a different presidential candidate back last summer. And so I admired what he was trying to do. He was trying to kind of raise the flag here and say, look, we got problems. But as the campaign has gone on, I think some of his messaging has been pretty counterproductive if he really wants to make sure Donald Trump isn't elected again. And it seems to me it's also kind of gone on too long. It's gone past its purpose. So we'll see what his constituents think in the third congressional district. He did flip that district, the first Democrat to do so, I think half a century or something in 2018. We'll see if they stick by him, although he is his congressional career, at least for now, is done. He's announced he's not running. So this could be his last hurrah in Minnesota politics. We'll have to see.
Well, make sure you go to MinnesotaReformer.com, the latest in Minnesota news and politics. And I'm with you on Dean Phillips. I'm not sure he makes much of an impact, but we will see with the results. We have been speaking with Patrick Houlihan, who is the editor-in-chief of the Minnesota Reformer. Again, that's MinnesotaReformer.com. As always, thanks for coming on the show today. Appreciate it.
Always a pleasure.
All right, let's take a break and send things back over to Matt McNeil on AM 950.